Hello and welcome in to another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean, back for a second episode this week because the first edition of the College Football Playoff Rankings came out yesterday. I think I can definitely say that was the biggest news and biggest event across the country on November 5th. Can't really think of anything else significant that happened. So today, I wanted to run through my initial thoughts and takeaways from the first edition of the College Football Playoff Rankings. I'm going to go through a crazy scenario that the playoff committee could have on their hands at the end of the season. I'm going to give you my official predictions for how the playoff will shake out, as we are now firmly in November and just a few weeks away from the playoff really taking form. Then we have a little bit of Big Ten news that I wanted to break down for you guys, and then we'll do a little pulse check on the Heisman to wrap up today's episode. So a lot to get through, so we're just going to dive right in. The first thing I want to talk about with this first edition of the College Football Playoff Rankings is Indiana, because this has definitely been a team that's been discussed the most at the national level. A lot of people, like Joel Klatt, fighting that they are underrated and saying what I've been preaching for a few weeks now, that if they had any other logo plastered to their name with that resume and schedule and statistics, that they would be the number two team in the country right now. And then we have people on the other side arguing vehemently that they haven't played anyone, that they are still just Indiana, and if anything, they are overranked. Honestly, going into the rankings, I was thinking I would be more upset than I am if they weren't a top five team, because I've been saying for so long that they have been the most dominant team in college football, and they are deserving of one of those top five spots. But the committee decided to put them eighth, right where the AP poll has them. And the more I thought about it, the more I understood it, and the less upset I really am about where they were placed. Yes, the fact still remains that if any other blue blood, like Ohio State or Michigan or Georgia, had that schedule and had that resume, that they would be ranked significantly higher than Indiana is right now. But we are seeing something completely unprecedented in college football, and that is a bottom feeder program like Indiana playing up with the big boys and enduring a one-year turnaround unlike anything we have seen in the history of college football. And you have to keep in mind that these are not computer rankings. These are human beings. This is not an AI model. These are human beings with feelings and with memories of what Indiana football is. And I understand them being a little hesitant to give Indiana that top five ranking and giving them the benefit of the doubt that a Michigan or a Georgia or Ohio State has tended to have in these rankings. And yes, you can argue that it's unfair, and I wouldn't say that you're wrong in that sentiment. But the reason I'm not really torn up about this is because they're in the top 10. They have every opportunity to still make the playoff. Now, whether or not they get a home or away game in that first round is still very up in the air. But where the committee put them at number 8 is appropriate for Indiana, considering their remaining schedule, considering they still play Michigan this weekend. And yeah, on paper, Michigan is not a good team. On paper, Indiana should beat them. But this is still the first time they have to block a guy like Kenneth Grant. This is the first time Curtis Rourke is going to have to throw to a guy like Will Johnson. And yeah, Michigan's not a great team this year, but Michigan still has more NFL players on it than any other team Indiana has played yet so far this season. So it is still a completely different game for Indiana if they're able to beat them. And then they go play at Ohio State. And where they're sitting at number 8 right now, I think this means that Indiana can afford a loss to Ohio State and still comfortably make it into the college football playoff. And if I'm a Hoosier fan, that's all I can ask for. Because I think Indiana fans aren't delusional either. They know who they are as a college football program. It's just really hard for us, after seeing 30, 40, 50 years of just putrid football coming out of Bloomington, it's hard to all of a sudden, you know, switch your mind to and accept the fact that a top five team resides in Indiana. So yeah, the argument is very valid that if any other team had their resume, they would be ranked higher. But at the same time, this is still Indiana, and I have to realize that humans make these rankings. Now, if we want to get into how we decide on these rankings, that's an entirely different argument, and I really wish we did have a computer model at least somewhere involved in this process. But we don't. We have human beings. And with that, I understand why Indiana is ranked where they are, because they have every opportunity to prove us wrong. And guess what? If they're frauds and if the people that are saying that they're still Indiana are right, then they will lose to Michigan and they'll get blown out by Ohio State and they'll be a non-factor in the playoff. I personally have them higher, but I understand why they're ranked where they are. And I don't think Indiana fans are too upset about it, so I don't think it's worth getting too worked up about either. That being said, I did find it very curious that Army was ranked 25th. I have them 16th in my rankings. Granted, that is higher than most people have them, and I would never say that Army is the 16th best team in college football. But 8-0 is 8-0, and they haven't been quite as dominant as Indiana has to their schedule, but they've beaten teams decidedly. They haven't had tight victories or controversial wins, or where they're winning on a field goal or off of penalties, or because they were plus five in the turnovers or something fluky like that. Now, they've been beating teams because they've been the better team. Yes, they are dead last in college football in strength of schedule, but 8-0 is 8-0. They've been similarly dominant to Indiana. So if we're going to rank Indiana in the top 10, I understand Army's schedule is even weaker. I think they deserve a little bit more credit for being undefeated, because your record is what your record is, and I think you have to give them credit for that. So that's a little bit of the inconsistency that we've just become familiar with the committee at this point. But again, Army plays Notre Dame in a couple weeks, and I think they have every opportunity to prove us wrong. And if they win that game, they should be in the college football playoff conversation. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there, because that would be, if they're able to upset Notre Dame, one of the upsets of the college football season. Some other takeaways I had from these rankings, though, is I think the top 12 right now, as it stands, is the clear top 12 in college football. Upsets are always fun. It's what college football is really built off of, and what college football fans live for are those monumental upsets that you never see coming. But for the sake of a quality college football playoff in its first season, I hope that top 12 stays the same and we don't see any of these teams get upset to the point where they get knocked out of the playoff, because I really think this is the clear top 12 in college football, and a lot of these teams, more than most years, have a legitimate chance to make a run in the playoff and compete for a national championship. Just looking at the rankings, Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, clearly three of the best teams in college football. Miami is undefeated and has arguably the best player in Cam Ward, and has a really great offensive line. Yeah, that defense is horrible, but their offense might be electric enough to beat anyone in the country. Texas, they haven't necessarily been impressive this year, but we know how much talent is on that roster. Same goes with Penn State. I think they have the talent, if they get their heads screwed on right, to go on a run in the playoff. Tennessee, their offense has been inconsistent, but having a defense like they do has really been able to keep them in some games. And I think if Nico is able to play his best game and the defense continues to play like they have been, Tennessee is capable of beating anyone in the country. Indiana, talked about them, they are the most dominant team in college football right now, and the way they're playing, I wouldn't count them out against Ohio State or any other team in college football. BYU has been more than just a fun team to watch. They have been undoubtedly the best team in the Big 12. They also have an offense that can go up with just about anyone, and they've been playing their best football in the fourth quarter of games too, which is incredibly important if they want to pull off an upset against one of these higher-ranked teams. Notre Dame might have the best defense in college football. And Alabama, yes, they've been up and down, but Kalen DeBoer has college football playoff experience, and Jalen Milroe is still one of the best players in college football. I will be damned if I count out Alabama at this point in the season right now. And Boise State, we saw what they did to Oregon earlier in the season. Granted, Oregon is playing a lot better than they were in that game, but still, Oregon went into Autzen Stadium and only lost by a point, and arguably should have won if they didn't give up two return touchdowns. All 12 of those teams are capable, I think, of beating anyone else on that list on any given Saturday. But once you get outside that top 12, SMU is a lot of fun to watch, but they really should have lost that game to Duke a couple weeks ago. And their defense reminds me a little bit too much of 2022 USC, where they're overly reliant on those big plays and forcing turnovers and winning the turnover margin. If they were to play a team like Miami, I think they could give up 70 points. Texas A&M, we saw last weekend, they're frauds. I knew that coming into the season, they've been fraudulent. LSU wasn't able to close out a game against USC, who can't close out games against teams like Maryland in the Big Ten. And they have virtually no consistent run game. They're not consistent on either side of the line of scrimmage. I don't think LSU is a legitimate threat. Same thing with Ole Miss. Yes, Jackson Dart is great, and their defense is playing better than in years past, but I'll be damned if I trust a Lane Kiffin team going into November and December. Now we're down to 17th, and we're looking at the second or third best team in the Big 12, the second or third best team in the ACC. And it's just, we're getting quickly into teams that don't have a legitimate shot at a team like Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, Miami, or Texas. I could go down the list. So I think it's very clear that the top 12 is the best. I'm a college football fan. I love upsets. I love crazy things happening in this sport. But for the sake of having a quality playoff in the expanded playoffs first year, I really hope this top 12 stays the same, because I think that could set up an unbelievable playoff. If we start to see some upsets and some of those teams ranked like 13 through 20 sneak in, I think we could get some real snoozer matchups in the first round that may even leak into the second round. So for that reason, I hope this top 12 stays the same, because it is clear the top 12 best teams in college football. And I also want to talk about the Big 12. No one's really talking about the fact that they have been shafted. Listen, I don't think anyone's going to argue that the Big 12 is one of the best conferences in college football. But after the initial rankings, we're still first week in November, And I don't really see a possibility of them getting two teams in. BYU is the clear best team. They should go 13-0, and if they do that, of course there's not going to be a second Big 12 team in there. But there are scenarios where you would think the Big 12 could find a way to sneak two teams in there. But after these rankings, I don't see those paths really existing. With Iowa State at 17, Kansas State at 19, and Colorado at 20, I don't see them being able to move up enough to where they can sustain a loss in the Big 12 championship and still make the field. The Big 12's best chance is if BYU goes 12-0 and then loses to, for example, an 11-1 Iowa State in the Big 12 championship, and you would hope that 12-1 BYU would still be good enough to make the Big 12 championship, but I think after these rankings, it's become clear that's not good enough. First of all, the committee did say that they would consider knocking teams for a poor performance in the conference championship. Reese Davis asked this question to the playoff committee, and I thought for once it was a really great question by ESPN when they're having these conversations with the committee. And he was asking, if a team earns this extra game in the conference championship, could they be knocked for it? Could they be knocked for a poor performance in an extra game that they earned? And the committee's answer was yes. Essentially, they will be watching that game, and if you play poorly, they will evaluate you as such. And to me, I think that was talking specifically about the Big 12 and how BYU could go 12-0, but if they don't win that Big 12 title game and if they don't look great, it seems like the committee won't hesitate to knock them for that loss. BYU is sitting ninth right now, and they only play one team with a winning record to finish out the season. So I don't see BYU being able to move up higher than eighth, maybe seventh, going into that Big 12 title game. And if they lose to a team outside the field, the impression I get is that BYU will get knocked out, even if they are 12-0 going into conference championship weekend. I think a loss would knock them out of the playoff. And that's the only path that the Big 12 has to getting two teams in. That was one of my biggest takeaways from these initial rankings, is that the Big 12 is not getting multiple teams in. And I'm okay with that. The Big 12 obviously is not the best conference in college football, but for that to be decided so early on, I think is a little concerning. I feel like BYU certainly deserves to be ranked higher than they are right now. But the good news for the Big 12 is that the American Athletic Conference doesn't seem to be a threat to the Big 12's bid. I talked about it last week that there is a scenario where the Big 12 champion has two or three losses. They could be knocked out of the playoff entirely by a team like Army or Tulane or Memphis. But the fact that Army is 25th and Tulane is unranked, I don't really see a path where any of those teams can move up high enough to dethrone a BYU, Iowa State, Colorado, or Kansas State. I feel like the Big 12 spot in the playoff is pretty safe, but unfortunately don't see a path for them getting two teams in. Another team that no one is really talking about as far as their playoff chances is Pitt. They sit at 18th right now, despite getting their doors blown off of them by SMU. In my rankings, I had Pitt closer to the bottom of the rankings. I think I had them 23rd, 24th. So the fact that they're in the top 20 right now, don't shoot the messenger, but Pitt is still alive in the college football playoff. They could go 11-1 with top 25 wins over Clemson and Louisville, who's still on their schedule to close out the season. And then they could miss the ACC championship because they lost that tiebreaker to SMU, which honestly might be better for them so they don't sustain that second loss. And then all of a sudden, they're 11-1, riding a five-game win streak with two top 25 wins. Pitt could definitely jump Iowa State, Ole Miss, LSU, and Texas A&M by season's end. And then they're sitting on the doorstep of the top 12. At 11-1, they'd only need a couple upsets to be right in the conversation. Certainly, it would be a long shot for Pitt to get in, but if they win out, they have two more top 25 wins ahead of them. An at-large bid for Pittsburgh is not out of the question. But of course, they have to win out, and I think that's the unlikeliest part about this whole scenario. But Pitt, still alive, no one's really talking about them, so if I'm a Panther fan, I am ecstatic about these initial rankings. And one other thing, as I was looking through these rankings for the first time, I was trying to ask myself, who can still lose a game and comfortably make it into the 12-team field without having to sweat on Selection Sunday, will they or won't they get in? So first, obviously, Oregon. I think they can still lose a regular season game and the Big Ten championship and still comfortably make it in. And then Ohio State. I think they can lose to Indiana or Michigan, still make it in as a 10-2 at-large team. And honestly, I think they have a really good chance of still hosting a playoff game even if they do lose a second game. Georgia, obviously, if they lose to Ole Miss or Tennessee, that would in no way be seen as a bad loss. They'd have to lose two more games to get kicked out of the field in my eyes. Miami seems safe. Whether they lose a regular season game or they go 12-0 and lose in the ACC title game, I think they are locked into the field. assuming they only have one or fewer losses left. Texas, assuming the losses to Texas A&M at the end of the season, if they lose that game, they should still be comfortably in the top 12. If they lose to someone else in the remaining schedule, though, because their schedule is not hard, I could see them taking quite a tumble because they don't really have any other signature wins. And if Texas A&M drops another game leading up to that and that becomes less of impressive of a win, you know, depending on who Texas loses to, I don't think they are guaranteed a spot, but they're very likely to stay in the field even with one other loss. Penn State, I think, is my biggest question mark as to whether or not they can afford a loss and still get into the field. Because personally, if they drop one of their remaining games at Minnesota, their second to last game of the season, I think that's a really great contender for a game that they could drop. If they lose another game, listen, I'm a Big Ten homer. I want to see as many Big Ten teams as possible in the playoff. But if they go 10-2 with this schedule, I don't really think Penn State will have earned a spot in the playoff. Now, it depends on where other teams are sitting, but if Penn State loses a game, they seem like they'd be safe because they're number six right now, but that loss would be to a team well outside the top 25, most likely. So with a second loss, I think at best, Penn State would be going into Selection Sunday, really having to sweat it out and really not being sure whether or not they would be in. And then Tennessee, they're definitely safe with another loss because if that loss is to Georgia, that's not going to be a bad loss. They won't fall too far for that. And if they lose to another team and that's their only loss, that's implying that they beat Georgia, which will be more than enough to overcome whatever bad loss they may experience down the stretch. So if they only lose one more game, Tennessee would definitely be in at 10-2. And Indiana, I think an 11-1 Indiana would be safely in. Unless they lose like 52-0 to Ohio State and it's a spanking from the beginning, I think as long as they're semi-respectable against Ohio State, because keep in mind it is on the road, I think that Indiana has been dominant enough for the rest of the season for them to sustain even a 2-3-4 possession loss to Ohio State. As long as they keep it, you know, semi-respectful, I think Indiana at 11-1 is safe. And those are the only teams who conceivably can still lose a game and be comfortable getting into the playoff. Before I get into my official predictions for how the season will finish out, I wanted to throw a crazy scenario that is not too unrealistic, a scenario where we could have six 10-2 SEC teams. So that would be 10-2 Georgia if they beat Tennessee but lose to Ole Miss this coming weekend. They would have losses to Alabama and Ole Miss, wins over Texas and Tennessee. So as impressive of as a resume as you can get at 10-2. Then 10-2 Tennessee with losses to Arkansas and Georgia, but a win over Alabama. 10-2 Alabama, or this could be 10-2 LSU. Really, it's just whichever team wins this weekend between Alabama and LSU. But for argument's sake, we're going to go with the favorite, which is Alabama. They'd have losses to Tennessee and Vanderbilt, but wins over Georgia and LSU. Then 10-2 Texas, who really wouldn't have a quality win in this scenario and have losses to Texas A&M and to Georgia. 10-2 Ole Miss, who would have that win over Georgia this weekend, but then losses to Kentucky and LSU. And then 10-2 Texas A&M with a win over Texas at the end of the season, but losses to Notre Dame and Missouri. So this would be quite a mess, because first of all, who the hell would make the SEC championship? And I believe in this scenario, it would be Ole Miss and Texas A&M facing off in the title. Texas A&M, because they were the only one-loss SEC team, because one of their two losses was out of conference to Notre Dame. And I believe Ole Miss would get that other spot because they have the head-to-head over Georgia and a better record among common opponents than Alabama. So in this scenario, you have 10-2 Ole Miss facing off against 10-2 Texas A&M in the conference championship. I think whoever loses that game would probably be eliminated from the playoff. But then, assuming we have the loser of Ohio State and Oregon in the Big Ten championship as one at-large bid, 11-1 Penn State, 11-1 Indiana, and 11-1 Notre Dame. Four at-large bids already locked up. That means we have three spots remaining for 10-2 Georgia, 10-2 Tennessee, 10-2 Alabama, 10-2 Texas. And then if we want to get really crazy, what if Miami and BYU both go 12-0 but lose in their conference championship game? Then all of a sudden you have to consider a 12-1 Miami and a 12-1 BYU. Six very deserving teams and you only get to pick three. In this scenario, I think 12-1 Miami is definitely in. I already talked about them before. I think they can afford a loss and still comfortably make it. They would likely be number three in this scenario going into the conference championship, facing maybe a top 10 SMU team. So if they lose that game, I cannot see a scenario where the committee drops them from three all the way out of the playoffs. So Miami should be in. Debate between a 10-2 Georgia, 10-2 Tennessee, 10-2 Alabama, 10-2 Texas, and 12-1 BYU for two at-large bids between those five teams. And just what a nightmare scenario for the committee that would be, because there's no way that you can make everyone happy in that situation. But that could be what we're hurtling towards. The SEC really could cannibalize itself. And that would just be a fascinating situation to see unravel for the committee. So if things are going to go up in flames, I hope it goes up like that, where the SEC cannibalizes itself and the committee has to, you know, make a decision of cutting out one of those SEC teams, all of whom, you know, would argue that they deserve to be in. So that would be some crazy chaos I would love to see. But I don't see the season finishing out that way. My official prediction, how I see the season finishing out, I think Indiana will go 11-1. I think they'll keep it close against Ohio State and do enough to earn an at-large bid. But I think it's Oregon and Ohio State facing off the Big Ten championship. I think the winner of that game is the number one seed and the loser is the number five seed. I don't think we're going to see any big SEC upsets like Ole Miss or Tennessee beating Georgia or Texas A&M beating Texas. I think we will see mostly chalk down the road, you know, through the rest of the season in the SEC. I also don't think Boise State gets higher than a 12 seed. People during the playoff rankings reveal they were talking about that possibility. But if a team in front of Boise State right now does lose, it's likely to one of the teams right on Boise State's tail. So I think if one of the teams in front of Boise State drops, there's going to be a team right behind Boise State that takes their place. Boise State doesn't really have any, you know, truly quality wins left on their schedule, even in the Mountain West Championship, because UNLV isn't ranked, and that would be a rematch of a game earlier in the season. So I don't really see enough on Boise State's resume to bump them above that 12 seed. I also think Miami will run the table, go 13-0, secure one of the top three seeds in the playoff. But I don't think BYU will be able to. I think they will stumble down the stretch in the Big 12. I mentioned they only play one winning team in the final four games, but they do play a couple 500 teams, you know, going on the road to Utah this weekend, for example. Prime opportunity for an upset at BYU. So I think they finished a regular season 11-1, then win the Big 12 title, because their Big 12 championship win would be presumably over a top 20 team at the very least. I think they will still stay above Boise State for that fourth bye week. So I think the final top 12 will look something like Oregon, Georgia, Miami, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Alabama, Indiana, Notre Dame, Tennessee, Boise State, and BYU. So I mentioned I hope that the top 12 doesn't change too much, and I don't really think it will be. So how that sets up for the playoff, I think we're going to have BYU awaiting the winner of Boise State at Ohio State, and then we're going to have Oregon awaiting the winner of Indiana at Alabama. We have Miami awaiting the winner of Tennessee at Texas, and Georgia awaiting the winner of Notre Dame at Penn State. Some really great first-round matchups. I think, obviously, Ohio State's going to beat Boise State and then beat BYU. I like Indiana to beat Alabama. They have been easily the more consistent team and more dominant team along both lines of scrimmage. I think they can absolutely walk into Tuscaloosa and come away with that victory. But then I think they would fall ultimately to Oregon, setting up a third game of Ohio State versus Oregon for the season in the semifinal. As I've been predicting throughout the offseason and really all season long, I think Ohio State and Oregon will match up three times this season, the third time being in the national semifinal. I like Texas to beat Tennessee, but then Miami to upset Texas. I have been underwhelmed with Texas's performance on both sides of the ball. Their defense has not been as dominant as I thought. And I think Cam Ward, with an extra week to prepare and an offensive line that's been mauling people, I think with that extra little bit of preparation to get ready for Texas and to rest up, I think they can hang points on Texas. And I don't know if Quinn Ewers will be able to keep up with them. So I actually like Miami to beat Texas. And then I like Penn State to beat Notre Dame. I think that's the most evenly matched first-round playoff game, Notre Dame at Penn State. And honestly, whoever hosts that game, I would probably pick the winner in this scenario. It would be Penn State. So I like Penn State to get a playoff victory and appease Penn State fans for at least one more season. But then I see them falling to Georgia. So then the national semifinals, I have Ohio State and Oregon, and then Miami and Georgia. I think Oregon bests Ohio State in the first two matchups, but I don't think they can do it a third time. And then Georgia, I just think their defense will be able to smother Cam Ward and not let him extend plays like he's been able to all season long. And then I think we get Ohio State and Georgia in the national championship, like a lot of people have been predicting, you know, throughout the offseason and for a lot of this current season. And I think Ohio State is our national champions. So that's my official prediction as we are in the first week of November, but I'm sure that's going to change as the season progresses. But those were my reactions, biggest notes from the first edition of the College Football Playoff Rankings. Going to move on now to our final little stretch of this episode, some Big Ten news and notes that I wanted to talk about very quickly. First off, great news for Oregon. Tez Johnson will return this season. It looked like he had a scary shoulder injury. People were thinking it was a separated shoulder, maybe a broken collarbone. But Dan Lanning, didn't give any timetable, but he said he does expect Tez Johnson to be back playing with the team soon, he said, quote unquote. So no idea what that means. The good news is that they expect him back at some point this season. I think the biggest thing for Oregon will be whether or not he can be back for the Big Ten championship game. Because, listen, Evan Stewart is equally as special of a receiver, but Tez Johnson has that speed. He is really how Oregon stretches the field vertically, and I think he is the biggest reason why it's so hard to defend everything Oregon can do. I think if you take away Tez Johnson, a defense like Ohio State can stack the box a little bit more, be a little bit more aggressive closer to the line of scrimmage, and I think they have a better chance at making Dylan Gabriel uncomfortable. And if Oregon loses that Big Ten championship, all of a sudden their path to winning a national championship becomes a lot harder because you go from a first-round bye to having to play that extra first-round game. So I think his availability for the Big Ten championship will be key as far as Oregon's chances of winning a national championship. Other news out of Nebraska, Dylan Raiola, he left that game against UCLA with an injury. It was his back. They did some x-rays, came back negative. He has a bye this week, and they expect him to be ready for their game against USC. I'll talk about that Nebraska-USC game a lot next week because the implications for both teams cannot be understated. Both teams desperately need a win, so can't wait for that game, but that's for next week. And then on Iowa's side, Cade McNamara still out with a concussion. He won't travel with the team when they play UCLA on Friday. I think probably good news for Iowa fans because they've been clamoring for Brendan Sullivan all season. They finally got him last week, and his legs really might be the key that this offense is needed to finishing out this season strong. And then Luke Lachey, their star tight end, who's been battling injuries this season. Kirk Ferentz said he's practicing in full capacity this week, which is good news. Seems like Luke Lachey will be questionable going into that game, but I like his chances of playing. And then last bit of Big Ten news, Miller Moss, USC's quarterback, who was the talk of college football in the first month of the season. He is being benched in favor of UNLV transfer Jaden Maiva. And this is actually something I predicted at the beginning of the season. I thought that USC would struggle, particularly along the line of scrimmage. I thought they would have a disappointing season. I thought they would eventually turn to Jaden Maiva, who has starting experience, had a really great season for UNLV last year, and is a much better athlete than Miller Moss. I think that he can mask some of the issues up front that USC has been having. They've been struggling to run the ball consistently, and I think then plugging in a quarterback who can run like Jaden Maiva can could solve a lot of their problems. I did find it interesting that Lincoln Riley made this news public so early on, so a team like Nebraska knows exactly who the quarterback is, and now they have 2 weeks to prep for this new quarterback. So I thought that was an interesting decision, but I like the change of pace for USC, and I do find it hard to believe that both Miller Moss and Jaden Maiva will be on this team in 2025, so this could be his tryout, really, for securing the starting job or for another team if Lincoln Riley ultimately ends up going back to Miller Moss by the end of the season. So huge implications for the team, but also for both quarterbacks when USC and Nebraska play in a couple weeks. And that'll do it for Big Ten news. Before we wrap up today's episode, I wanted to do a quick pulse check on the Heisman. And it seemed like the race has been down to four for quite some time. But I think after this weekend, it's official. It is now simply Travis Hunter, Dylan Gabriel, Cam Ward, and Ashton Jeanty. I think those are the four. At this point in the season, I think it is too late for anyone else to really work up to the place where those four guys are. I think Travis Hunter, this isn't necessarily a bold take, but I think he's easily the biggest wild card. I think if they win the Big 12, they finish like 11-2, potentially in the playoff, and he has a couple big games on big stages, Heisman moments, as you could call them. I think that he could go into that ceremony as the clear favorite. He certainly has the opportunities ahead of him, considering his unique nature and how he plays both sides of the field. He has everything in front of him to impress the country and become the clear favorite for the Heisman. But if Colorado stumbles down the stretch, if they end up like 8-4, if he gets hurt and misses another game, if he gives up a touchdown or, you know, has a couple games where he doesn't haul in too many catches, if Colorado as a team or Travis Hunter as a player is anything but amazing down the stretch, there is a really good chance that Travis Hunter misses out on the Heisman ceremony entirely. So I think he's the biggest wild card. He could skyrocket up and become the clear favorite or miss out on the ceremony altogether. Ashton Jeanty, he has slowed down a little bit, has not maintained that incredible pace he had for the first season. I think he has still secured his spot in New York, but I have a hard time seeing him actually win the award now. And then that comes to Dylan Gabriel and Cam Ward. I think they're guaranteed to get invites at this point. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario where Miami goes 13-0 and Cam Ward does not win the Heisman. So I think if Miami wins out, the award really is Cam Ward's to lose. But if he loses a game, either in the ACC championship or at some point in the regular season, it really does open things up. Because I think Dylan Gabriel, if he goes 13-0 with Oregon, I think he then becomes the clear favorite, again, depending what Travis Hunter does. So even though we're down to four finalists, I think Travis Hunter, Dylan Gabriel, and Cam Ward are the only three that can really win it, unless all three kind of fall apart and Ashton Jeanty is just the last guy standing. If Dylan Gabriel throws three interceptions in the Big Ten championship and loses. And same case with Cam Ward. And then if Travis Hunter, you know, gets hurt and doesn't play all of his games, or if Colorado finishes 8-4, if all that happens, Ashton Jeanty could win the Heisman by default. So it will be very interesting to see how this shakes out over the final few weeks. This is shaping up to maybe be the most wide open Heisman we've had in quite some time, with four guys having a legitimate claim to the trophy. If the season ended today, my ballot would probably be Cam Ward, Dylan Gabriel, Ashton Jeanty, Travis Hunter, but it is not that cut and dry. It is really close, and it will certainly be fascinating to see how this Heisman race shakes out down the stretch of the college football season. With that being said, that'll do it for this episode of the Big Ten Blitz. Hope you enjoyed this second bonus episode for the week. As always, we will return next week to recap some Big Ten games, talk college football playoff, and so much more. Please make sure you are following us on Twitter at TheFloorSlap and check us out on our website, TheFloorSlap.com. Always posting articles and opinions and thoughts. As always, I've been your host, Sean. I appreciate anyone and everyone that's out there listening. Hope you have a great end to your week. Get to enjoy a great weekend of college football, and I will catch you here next week. Thanks.